A lot of sports, Ryan. I love NFL. I like the NBA when it comes to the playoffs. I love Major League Baseball. Love my Braves. But to me, there's just nothing that compares to college football.
There's nothing that fires us up down in Tuscaloosa like college football. And I just did a four-hour show. I mean, you can begin to kind of taste it a little bit. And we're down to almost that 50-day mark with Alabama and Duke. And when you really get to thinking about it, it's pretty incredible. You know, when you really step back and kind of understand, you know, the long offseason. I know you and I've talked about this multiple times here. It's been a long offseason, but the calls were rowdy today, my friend. Rowdy today as we get ready for college football in T-Town.
Yeah, you know, certainly the off season after 2010, Alabama up 24-0 on Auburn in the Iron Bowl, lose the game 28-27, and oh, by the way, then watch Auburn go on to win the national championship. That off season was bad. The score 28-27 was throughout the building. The players, I remember Trent Richardson talking to me about it, for example. Everybody was talking about having to be reminded about what played out in the Iron Bowl in 2010. I bring it up because, you know, that's one thing, but the way Alabama, from a score standpoint, lost to Clemson earlier this year in January in the national title game, this is uncharted waters. I'm interested to see, and look, we won't know this until probably 2 or 3 or 4 years down the road, exactly how this all played out behind the scenes. I'm curious to finally, you know, maybe one day find out, like being a fly on the wall, find out what the last few months have been like for individuals associated with this football program.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to know that too. And, you know, when you look at Alabama, Johnny Itzay, You hear this Alabama factor, but, you know, we talk about the good start as far as the motivation side of things. The motivation. And the motivation beside that you get beat, you kind of drives you through the off season. But, you know, Alabama wins a lot of games by intimidation. They win a lot of games by getting off the bus. And I wonder when you see somebody, you know, Mike Tyson gets hit in the mouth, what happens? Well, a lot of people begin to kind of look at it and say, okay, well, if he gets hit in the mouth, and if he can do it, I can do it. If he can do it, I can do it. And so when you step up a little bit, it's kind of one of those that Alabama kind of got hit in the mouth. And, hey, it's will other people look at it and go, all right, if Clemson could do it, then that Alabama brand – in other words, it took a hit. Johnny, you probably know this. I don't. When's the last time Alabama got beat 44-16? When's the last time Alabama got taken to the woodshed? I mean, it's not in the Nick Saban era.
1998, the first version of the Music City Bowl when Virginia Tech beat Alabama right here. And the game was not even played at Nissan Stadium. It was played then at Vanderbilt. That's it. Well, you have to go back. You have to go back a while. The last time Bama suffered a loss like that. But here's the thing, and you and I have talked about in the offseason, score wise, a bad loss. But I, when you start breaking the game down, and I'm sure this is the way coaches think, and the players even look at it from that perspective as well. The game, as far as it was, a lot closer than that score indicated. Because I go back to, you know, the whatever that was, that fake field goal attempt. Why wasn't Tua out there throwing the ball? I'll never know. But we're talking about, you know, Alabama in the red zone twice there. Two touchdowns there. The difference of this now being anybody's ball game with 12 minutes to go. So, yeah, score-wise, it looks bad, but there's ways to make that glass half full instead of half empty.
No, I mean, I guess you can. And, you know, I go back to this. You know, we played the game today of what would you ask Nick Saban? What would you ask Nick Saban to maybe something that you would know? And it was a lot of people that asked, what happened? You know, was it entitlement? Was it a sense of entitlement that developed in your football team, and that's what, you know, sort of got things going. It's a, you know, it's crazy to it's just hard to wrap your head. Alabama fans have not dealt with it. And doing a radio show and kind of being the voice of Tuscaloosa with all of our fans kind of chiming in and kind of mean, like, you know, we took probably 35 phone calls today. And I bet 20 of them mentioned that they would love to ask Nick Saban, what really happened? What went wrong?
See, that's a mistake because you know as well as I do, he will. That is not the way to ask a question along those lines of Nick Saban, because he will he doesn't want to go there. Now, what you can do, and we learned this after losing on the final play against Clemson, you know, as far as that national title game 3 years ago, you can ask him, what can you learn from that loss to help you this year? And maybe then you can really start getting into, because he loves to explore losses. He doesn't want to even look at wins, for example. He loves to learn from losses. And I think you're going to see a probably the most motivated Nick Saban has been in years.
And that's the you hope that if you're an Alabama fan, but it's the part. Yes, this is a talented football. But, Johnny, I've asked the question here in Tuscaloosa multiple times in the last 2 months. And this is the question. When you look at Tua Tagovailoa, you look at Jerry Jeudy and all those wide receivers, you look at that offensive line, if they don't win it with this schedule, when will he win it?
Well, regular season-wise, I agree with you. But, you know, all bets are off after the regular season. You know, first of all, you got to get through an SEC title game, most likely against Georgia. And then, who knows, Georgia could be back in that mix as far as one of the four playoff teams. So it's one thing to navigate the waters of the regular season. Look, it's been, you know, Alabama has been blessed as a football program, you know, since we started talking about the college football playoff back in 2014, obviously being the only team to be there every year. And the fact that we talk about multiple national titles for Alabama during this stretch as well, Bama, also Clemson being able to pull that off. So thumbs up for both of those programs. But, you know, it's one thing to be in a position to win a national title. It's another thing altogether to actually win it. I mean, you go back to Bear Bryant days. You know, you go back every year except for one in the 70s where, you know, the Crimson Tide under Bear Bryant had chances to win national titles, and they won one in 73 when national titles were handed out before bowl games. Otherwise, they wouldn't have won that year. And then, they pull it off in the 78-79 year. So, with that said, you look at the misses in the 70s, for example, under Bear Bryant. It's not easy to win a national title.
No, it's not. Do you think it's easier now to win or harder now or easier than? I mean, because, see, this is a debate that we talk about. Obviously, the Saban-Bryant comparison begins to kind of, you know, creep in a little bit, and we kind of debate this a lot. To me, it's more challenging now, and I think what Saban's been able to, you know, to do, I mean, you mentioned Coach Bryant of the 70s. You know, you look at 2 6-5 seasons back-to-back. In 69 and 70. So it's kind of fun to look at it, but it's also kind of fun to kind of help us understand the conversation. And you want to say that Nick Saban is going to use this to motivate and to drive them across the finish line. But then you also look at it and you say, with this much talent on one roster, if he doesn't, to 2020 is, Johnny, 2020 is going to be slim for Alabama. Unless they do, this is the only but, unless they beat teams so bad in 2019 that they're able to build some significant depth.
And they always have that opportunity and expect that again this year. You asked that question, and I'll answer it. There's two ways of looking at it. I think it's tougher to win a national title now only because, think about it, especially if you're Alabama, because you get the Iron Bowl against Auburn, always tough no matter what the records are, and then you have to win the SEC title game against the team beating, you know, whoever wins in the East, whether it's Florida or Missouri in the years past or Georgia, and then not just one stage, but two as far as the college football playoff. But on the other side, flip side, I remember last year asking Bobby Bowden this question because he has two national titles to his credit. But back when he was coaching Florida State, if we had this college football playoff system, if we had that back in the day when he was coaching Florida State, he would have had chances to win nine national championships being a part of the college football playoff. And I asked him, I said, right now, knowing that I could say, okay, give me back the two national championships, but I'm going to give you a chance to win nine, what would you do? Keep the two you have or give them to me and have the opportunity to play for nine? He says he didn't even hesitate. I wanted to play for the nine. So it's easier in the sense that you control your own destiny now as far as being able to be in that position and win a national title compared to, say, the Bear Bryant days, because so many times the best teams in the country at the end of the year never faced off against each other in the bowl games.
Well, and certainly, I mean, it was a beauty contest. It was a different type of system, obviously. And I like what we have now, but I look at Alabama. I mean, Nick Saban, how many would he have won if the playoffs would have been put in, you know, more? Like 2013, he probably had the team to do a three-peat.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you can play the card a lot of different ways. They're both legendary coaches, there's no doubt. But it's kind of fun to kind of reflect on that, of what's more difficult and, you know, what's harder and what's going to motivate this team. And I talk to Bryant people privately sometimes, some of the former players. And, you know, Bryant also had a ton of scholarships. Could you imagine? All right, look, let's just up the number.
I mean, let's just admit it. Yeah, they were scholarships, football scholarship players that were on the tennis team, baseball, you name it. They were hitting all over that campus.
Sure.
Because who was the AD, by the way? Oh, that would be Bear Bryant. Thank you very much.
Yeah. So think about it. I mean, and that was that's what sort of created the mentality here when, you know, you kind of look at it of, you know, a lot of the other sports maybe don't get the grease or the oil on the attention. So that, you know, because a lot of people say that basketball needs a new arena, and, you know, they came out with the plans a couple of months ago, and, you know, basketball's not in phase one. It's in phase two and three. So it kind of started with that mentality of, you know, what was a priority. And football, it is here. And you almost look at some of the sports when they have success, they have to overcome a lot because, I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, I do a radio show in Tuscaloosa, and we hit sports of other scores. We just hit them and go because people want to talk football, regardless if it's January, February, March. Basketball just it doesn't drive the conversation. Baseball doesn't drive the conversation. Softball, they've had a lot of success, but it just doesn't drive the conversation.
But here's the thing. I think it would if you had a personality, say, when Wimp Sanderson was coaching. Because,
sure,
you know, I mean, so if you had a version of Wimp Sanderson today coaching that basketball team in Tuscaloosa, then, you know, with the plaid jacket, you know, just being a novelty, besides also being able to produce some great, great basketball teams, then I think that it'd be a different story. But see, that's the thing. You can't just go out and win games. You need a little bit of more. You need more than that to attract. I mean, look, this is what, when you win national titles in football and when you're one of the teams that are in that short sentence of best football programs historically ever, as we celebrate the 150th year of college football, then look, there's a reason for that. What I like, though, and doesn't get really talked about enough, everybody wants to talk about, it's football in Tuscaloosa. But I still love to talk about, for me, what athletics is all about is the fact that it's your best PR tool that you have to open the doors and show everybody what's going on that campus and from an educational standpoint. And so, yes, Nick Saban has been well paid. We all know about that. And we know about the facilities as far as football at Alabama. But what doesn't get talked about enough is all the money that is being donated to all of those programs from an educational standpoint because of the success of Alabama football in Tuscaloosa.
Well, and see, that's the part that, you know, we didn't hit in phase one. Phase one of the construction facility, then they got to be able to generate enough on the football side of things to pay for all the other sports. I mean, I'm looking right now at a baseball stadium that, because I had to do something on quick on campus, and I'm looking at a baseball facility right now that's somewhere around $40-something million. Beautiful facility. I mean, it looks like a minor league park. And I know all the SEC schools do, but they wouldn't have that without the building that I'm also staring at right now, and that's called the, you know, the football building. And you look at the weight room, and you look at the indoor facility. I mean, these things, without the success of football, you don't get those. And it's kind of unique to kind of see all this develop in the conversation and watch these facilities. You know, you almost have to go back and thank Coach Mal Moore for having a vision, to take the facilities to the next level. And, you know, I can go out here and circle the spot where he stood and said, I'm going to raise $100 million on a facility upgrade. And this was prior to Nick Saban's arrival. And people laughed at him. Man, there was media grouping around because he went out there with a hard helmet and a shovel, and I think it was Bryant Jr. and maybe a couple of other board of trustees. They came out and they shoveled some dirt and threw it around and said they were going to raise $100 million in their facilities. And people were laughing at him. He raised $240 million in facilities. And the goal was initially 100. And that's why the facilities are some of the best in the business, if not the best. So that's the conversation that really you have to almost go back, because Nick Saban doesn't really get the program. Like, if he doesn't walk into a situation where, you know, when I got in the business in 2000, I walked in Alabama's weight room. I've seen high school weight rooms that were bigger. I wish I would have took pictures. Because, I mean, you'd walk in and be like, this is Alabama's weight facility? But see, they had this mentality of they're going to come because it was Alabama. They were going to come to Alabama just because it strictly said ALABAMA on the side of the helmet or the jersey. And they had this mentality. And so Coach Mal Moore changed that. And so he implemented a fundraising and said, hey, if we're going to make that program the best that it can possibly be, and that's where other programs are trying to get. I mean, I'm watching a lot of fundraising efforts throughout the SEC. I was in Destin a couple of weeks ago and listened to these guys talk. And it's a conversation that all the people are trying to position themselves, like Coach Mal Moore did, of taking Alabama and kind of reestablishing that. I had Joe Namath on a couple of months ago. I asked him, because him and Coach Mal Moore were best buds, and we were talking about Nick Saban, and we were talking about, I said, did Mal tell you that he was going to get Nick Saban? He said, yeah, and I told Mal he better have a backup plan, because Nick Saban's not leaving Miami to go to Alabama. I mean, that was his best buddy telling him that. He said, you better have a backup plan. Now, you got to remember, the fundraising effort started with Joe Namath. Joe Namath loaned his name to the University of Alabama. That's how he got started, with the celebrity golf tournaments and raising all the tons of cash. That's how it all got started, with Joe Namath kind of lending the university his name and saying, hey, you know, use my name. And he brought in all these pro athletes. They did fundraiser after fundraiser. And it was, you know, Joe even doubted Coach Mal Moore. But Coach Mal Moore believed in Alabama. He believed in Alabama when very few people did, because most people said, there ain't no way you're going to get Nick Saban. You know, and he went down and he smooth-talked Miss Terry.
Oh, yeah, he was not invited. Sure. He just takes, yeah. He goes on a plane, goes to South Florida, and basically ambushes Miss Terry, yeah. And finds his way into the Saban home while Nick Saban is coaching practice with the Dolphins. And you know, here's Nick's like, I'm going to make this work here. It's like, well, you know, Mal Moore is right here in our living room. And the rest is history.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Because Nick calls home and says, and I guess, you know, I like we all do. I mean, I'm going to call my wife as soon as I hang up just to make sure I don't need to pick up anything for dinner. And Nick called and said, you know, and something about talking and, you know, hey, Alabama wants to talk to me. And he's going on and saying, well, you know, what do you mean to do this right here? And you think I should talk to him? And she says, honey, it's too late. They're already here. They're sitting in my living room. So here she is, you know, but what he's doing is he's doing that old recruiting. That's the recruiting that Coach Bryant, the smooth talking, he's sitting in the living room. He knew, and he probably heard somebody give a hint that you get to, because listen, Nick Saban is in charge in that football building, but up on Lake Tuscaloosa, Miss Terry, when she's ready to retire, they'll go to Lake Burton, okay? And she feels like she is the mother of this football team, that she is a part of this, and she is a part of it. She's a huge part of our community. The stuff that didn't get talked about, the things that, you know, they build and charities that they're involved. I mean, it's amazing, you know, the first lady of Alabama football here in Tuscaloosa, Miss Terry. But that was what Coach Mal Moore did. He went after her because she didn't have a role in the NFL. Coaches' wives don't go in the football building and, you know, cook breakfast for recruits. They don't have a role. And he sold her on, hey, college is where you guys belong. And without that, you know, two-hour talk, but Coach Mal Moore told me, he said, and this is prior to his death, that he camped out in a car with a Subway sandwich and a box of, like, crackers and drinks waiting outside, like, the neighborhood. And had this sort of thing planned. He told me before he got on the air about this. He's sitting in a car camped out in Saban's neighborhood because everybody else told him that he wouldn't that he wouldn't get him. And then Coach Mal Moore also told me that he had a leak inside of his – if you read the Crimson book, it kind of dives into some of this. He had a leak inside of his athletic department. He didn't even tell his athletic department. He took an opposite plane to get to Miami. He didn't even take the university plane. He took a booster that could trust. And Joe Namath, he told Joe Namath that he was going to get Nick Saban. And Joe said, you better have a backup plan because Nick Saban's not leaving Miami. And so Coach Mal Moore, and he told us on the air, he said, if Coach Saban says no, I'm not. I would never go back to Tuscaloosa. He said he was going to Cuba.
Well, I was thankful, first of all, that Rich Rodriguez decided not to come because I thought that was going to be a bad move. But my favorite Mal Moore story, you know, here's a guy that played for Bear Bryant, coached with Bear Bryant, under Bear Bryant, became the AD, and unfortunately, it's been over 6 years now since he passed away at the age of 73. But I was a honorary coach for the Alabama A-Day game back in 2010, celebrating the national title season. And I was standing on the sidelines next to Mal Moore, and he was looking up at the construction going on in the south end zone. And as we're talking about now going into a 100,000-plus stadium as when the construction would be completed. And I asked him, I said, you know, what do you think Bear Bryant would say? How do you think he would feel about this? And he actually teared up. And, you know, to see, you know, strong, emotional men like this, but, you know, really usually they have their act together. But a tear came to his eye and he said he would be looking down and being so proud. And that is, to me, is my favorite Mal Moore story. And having that opportunity to ask him that as he watched, you know, this football stadium become what it is today.
Yeah, and they're going to take the facilities to the next level too. I mean, I've seen the renovations of Brian Diddy. I mean, you got to remember Brian Diddy doesn't need renovations. I'm not trying to poke fun, but you know, I've been to the stadium down in Lee County. I've been to the stadium over in Knoxville. You know, there's some significant upgrades that needed to those facilities. I'm not trying to take shots. I'm just trying to be honest. Bryant Denny is not in poor condition. It's not like the facilities are behind, but they're about to dump a fundraising that just will put it over the top. And see, what they're doing is Greg Byrne is positioning himself when 7-8 years from now that he'll have that facility leverage that Coach Mal Moore had, that he could say, when he sits there and he talks to whoever, you know, if it's Dabo, I know you and I disagree on this, but whoever, if he sits down and convinces
Jeremy Pruitt,
well, yeah, Well, and hey, speaking of Jeremy Pruitt, Coach Stallings took up for him today on the air about that stupid NCAA violation. Even Alabama fans.
Oh, I didn't even get a chance to get into that. It's such a stupid. For those that did not hear about this, so a minor violation by Jeremy Pruitt. So what did he do? The high school that he attended won a state basketball title this year. So the high school that he went to. His alma mater. Not that he's trying to recruit anybody from there. It doesn't matter. So he sends out a simple tweet congratulating them. Plainview High School. It's not like one of the bigger high schools in Alabama. And that's a violation. You know, he had to take it down 37 minutes later because it was a violation. And the compliance officer over in Knoxville said, hey, you got to get that down. That's when, okay, stop. I mean, I understand there's a reason why these rules are out there because, unfortunately, too many coaches have used them to their advantage. But that one, stop. Just stop with the nonsense.
Yeah, but listen, when you got Alabama fans taking up for Tennessee, you know the NCAA stepped over.
Yep.
But Coach Stallings, I'll use the phrase that he always tells us. If the NCAA sport, chances are I'm against it.